everyone, and welcome to the new episode of Nature's Under. This one is with my great friend Thomas, Letters from the Ruins. If you've been here for a while, you'll know that he's been on the show on episode 5, which is exactly 2 years ago now. So that was great, but I think this conversation is even better. This episode is actually part 1, because we recorded this content in the past 2 days. This is the third day that I'm recording this and editing it, but yeah, 2 episodes. And they're very different, so they're separate episodes. This one is about religion, about faith, about philosophy, you know, about King that happened now in England, and many of these interesting topics that I believe are very important. Like, just for me, this episode was insanely valuable, just to hear these things that, you know, you can easily forget. Absolutely must listen episode, if I can say so myself. And the second episode is also very, very great. It is about nutrition, about training, about the things that we learned in the past 2 years, about parasites, about supplements, all those things that we maybe cannot really talk about on Instagram because the size of the content doesn't allow us, you know, but we can talk about it freely here. So just so many great conversations, you know. Thomas is such a well-spoken person, smart guy, and I'm sure that you'll enjoy this. So that's it for me. Enjoy the talk, and yeah, I'll see you soon. Well, hello, Thomas. It's been a long time, 2 years, but we're finally back, man. I'm happy to have you on. Hello.
How's it going, man?
It's very good.
It's a pleasure to be on the podcast.
Oh, of course, of course. It's finally time to record our esoteric conversation we always have in private.
Yeah, we've been talking a lot recently about the deepest and most unknown topics to mankind. But I think, you know, we both agreed that it's time to bring this to light to the public. Because, you know, a lot of the things we've been talking about, I've also refrained from posting on because they couldn't necessarily be one of those written down posts. So, yeah, this could be a very good format to explore some of those things. You know, there's obviously one thing in mind there, but there's a range of topics that we always talk about that I think people would bring, you know, would bring people value just generally. We always talk about fitness. You know, we update each other with fitness because we're obsessed with it. So, you know, I think a lot of people care about fitness in our sphere. It's one of the reasons they got into it. But there's many other topics as well. So I'm excited to explore some of them in this podcast.
Oh, man, sure. Absolutely, absolutely. Like I said, it's been a long time. And my episode with you is probably my favorite. Like, it's just the conversation, the topics, you know, that we talked about. So many things. And I'm sure this one will be even better. So yeah. I think I will start off with asking you about what just happened in the UK. You got a king. After a long time, and we got the king. Tell me, what does this mean to you? Like, this whole process, this whole, I guess, thing of having a king in the country.
Yeah, it's, I mean, the sole fact that we have a monarchy is rare in the modern world. That's one thing. But the other thing is that we haven't actually had any political upheaval in this country in a violent way since the 1600s, which was, you know, the English Revolution, when the king had to reinstate himself after Parliament for many months under Oliver Cromwell, essentially declared, you know, self-rule. We became a republic for a short period of time. Well, actually, Oliver Cromwell was king. But regardless, you know, by the by, this country has remained fairly conservative through the French Revolution, the American Revolution, the 1848 revolutions across Europe, when every monarch was challenged and parliaments were given more power. What happened in the UK was a very slow drip feed toward republicanism and liberalism, which many are in denial about. And the reason they're in denial about it is because of the public rituals that we have, such as the coronation, but also, you know, that we have kind of royalism in every corner and facet of British life, and it's unapologetic, and it's somewhat inherited. It just exists because it's always existed, but it's also accepted by most people. There are anti-royalists, but there, you know, the standard British person is a monarchist, which is very rare in the modern world, very rare. So coming to this Prince Charles, or King Charles now, so fiasco due to the Queen's death in the last year, everyone was ready for it. Everyone knew that the Queen would eventually pass, you know, the former queen would eventually pass. But, you know, when it actually happened, it was like a shock for the nation. It forced us to reconsider our direction as a people, and also what we had assumed to be the case, which is that we will always have this monarch. You know, the queen was 70 years, you know, reigning this country, over this country. It's a very, very long reign. And we were so used to it. But, you know, the second that it happened, you know, the outpouring of, you know, of respect towards our traditions was incredible. I mean, I don't know how much you know about the ritual around the monarch, but essentially, when a monarch dies, 8 days of ceremony begin. It's like clockwork. People are just prepared for it. So the soldiers have to march in a certain way. Certain rituals have to be performed. They're all rooted in tradition and have been for almost 1,000 years, potentially more. You know, at the very minimum, hundreds of years. And the same is with the coronation. So the coronation, you know, was about 6 or 8 months after the death of the queen. Obviously, they had to actually get everything together. And every step that occurred in that coronation was something that was almost timeless. Now, there are a few elements of liberalism which are kind of sewn in. But what I was surprised by is how little liberalism was sewn into the coronation. Actually, there was one moment which everyone will know, which was this weird dance during the Alleluia done by people of African descent. But otherwise, the coronation was completely fine. It was actually acceptable. So that was quite nice. But, you know, the thing is, when you look at this thing, I mean, you'll see the aesthetics from it. You see just oceans of British people coming out to support their monarch. And whether you're Catholic or Protestant, having something else, by the way, having a respect for the Protestant monarchy is acceptable. You know, even as a Catholic, it's acceptable. And the reason for that is because the tradition of monarchy is the default tradition of mankind and of Christian societies and nations. You should assume the monarchy because the monarchy is a direct connection from the state to the church and to God himself. And the monarch is only accountable to God. And so as British citizens, we have to swear allegiance. You know, we should swear allegiance to our king, and we should desire to, because, you know, regardless of the life of the king or the controversies that he has been part of, he knows those controversies. He knows his problems because he has laid them down before God himself. And he cannot be cynical as a political leader in the same way that a parliamentarian leader such as a prime minister can be, because a prime minister is governed by the news cycle and journalism, whereas a king can try to be and then has to face God with the fact that he's done that. And that is the difference between monarchy, which is accountability before God, and you know, politics, which we have today, which is accountability before the people. And the people are fickle and deceptible and deceptive themselves. And that stark difference is something that must be considered. Either way, I have, you know, certain problems with Charles. I guess I have historical problems with Charles. I think many people do. But today and yesterday, when the coronation happened, I forget them. I'm prepared and open to see how he governs this empire. You know, this it's not an empire anymore, but it is a commonwealth of nations. There's many nations, Australia, Canada, who the head of state is still the monarch. And I anticipate how he will rule this commonwealth, and how he'll rule this nation, and whether we might have some direction as a people again, which we've lost for some time.
Absolutely, it's definitely exciting. Also, just looking from the outside, you know, and the whole ceremony and everything about it is just, it feels epic to experience something like this in our time, to still have something like this, you know. It's just amazing. It's all of these things that we talk about, most of the things that we talk about, you know, and then you can see this in the process and stuff like that, you know, like swearing down the Bible, holding the Bible and swearing and stuff like that. It's so beautiful that we still have, even like you said, in this world, such things, such traditional things that can be shown to the world. Even though, like, when I read comments and stuff like that, more and more people are like, why do we need this? Like, why do we need the king? This is all stuff like that. But it just, for me, it felt like powerful that it's still going on, even though it has nothing to do with me personally. But still, like, I loved to see it.
But, yeah. On that, actually, if you'd allow me to add a point just briefly, I know I'll be talking for 89% of this podcast, but no, I'll try and keep it down a bit. Thinking about that, any criticism you have of this tradition, you can have them privately, but just realize if you actively and openly desire for this tradition to be sunk down because it's not perfect, or it has it has issues, or maybe it's not in line with Catholicism, for example, it actually is historically, it's just that certain words have been changed since the Protestant Reformation. Within the coronation, what we're not talking about a perfect thing versus what happened yesterday. We're talking about what would happen if we didn't have that coronation. Well, it would all be destroyed. Every single soldier there would be just some guy, who has a normal job and doesn't do this. There would be no beauty. It would be replaced by I can't quite articulate how what you're comparing what happened yesterday to, because you're not comparing it to some other tradition or some other thing. You're comparing this tradition that exists in the real world and has done for hundreds, more than 1,000 years. You're comparing it to just nothing. There would have been nothing. A person would have died. There would have been a funeral, which was private within a family. And then that would have been it. And that happens every day. Your family has funerals and you go to them, and that's really important for you. But there's nothing transcendent for a nation about that. And as a nation without this, when a president dies in America, it's like, okay, oh, well, let's remember them. Let's write a few news articles about them. They were good, or maybe they were bad. And that's it. And then you move on. But, in England, we have an actual transcendent monarch who has devoted themselves to the nation and their lives to the nation and to God, by the way, as I say. Mm-hmm. And what we have there is something which touches and scratches upon the ancient world, which we've mostly destroyed at this point. And it cannot be understated that this is one of the last national traditions which is actually alive in the modern world. There is almost nothing, and the reason for that is because as soon as you criticize and try to denigrate whatever traditions you have, you replace it with just a vacuum of nothing. You replace it with, instead of the millions of pounds that were spent on that coronation yesterday, if that was not spent there, it would have just been spent on maintaining the welfare state that just keeps people alive, basically. We've just maintained this kind of health state that we have right now, where you just make the sole purpose of life is to just increase 75-year-olds' lives by 2 years by giving them $200,000 operations. That's literally all there is in life. It's just maintaining sick life for a longer period of time. It's building bigger favelas around cities to allow minorities to have housing. That's literally all there is in this world. If you don't have traditions, you just have the multiplication of sewage and people who live on sewage water. That's it. I'm not joking here. That's what you have. You can either have a beautiful tradition, or you can just have sewage, out open sewage in your cities. That is the decision that you get as a modern society.
Absolutely great point. And I definitely agree, because the modern society, it is soulless. It is simply, like you said, survival, work, die. Mm-hmm. And there's nothing beautiful about it. And the thing about this monarchy itself, that is, like, it is connected not only to the nation, to the state, but like you said, to God. So it is this beautiful thing that can help just keep the spirit, just that who you are, what you stand for. That is what is missing today, And I'll give you one example. For example, here in Croatia, It's also like we had the war 30 years ago and stuff like that. That was a big thing. But after that, you know, we started to kiss ass for the European Union and stuff like that. And we lost our completely like the sense of our like pride, our history, stuff like that. The only time that today we feel like Croatian is, for example, when there's a sport event. When we like are winning some like, cup or something like that. That's when everyone gets together, starts singing songs, starts, you know, cheering. But other than that, nothing. It is like you said, soulless. Like I said, soulless. And the people going abroad to work, people like not caring about the jobs here. More and more minorities coming in. Like I have, even where I am in a small town, I have a lot of people from Nepal coming and stuff like that. Many, many more of them are replacing the jobs because people do not want to work here, you know, they're not getting paid enough. And slowly but surely, everything is happening to us that is happening to the rest of the Europe. It's gonna happen because, like you said, there's nothing. There's nothing there if there's no tradition. There's nothing there if there's no something to be proud of, someone to truly lead and not someone just to talk in the parliament and try to get more money out of European Union, you know?
The great problem of being a conservative in the modern world is, you know, many people listening to this will not consider themselves liberals and people who want to destroy traditions, but they may consider themselves conservatives because they want to maintain traditions and they want to have a semblance of normality in their lives. They don't want to have, you know, transgenderism like governing their nation, and they don't want to, you know, they have lots of ideas about what they don't want.
Yeah, exactly.
And conservatism is, you know, when you look at a great building, a beautiful building, I know that in Dalmatia there are many beautiful buildings which are old, you can look at that building and seek to preserve it. But what you can't do within conservatism is you cannot replicate the spirit that built those buildings. You can try to maintain the spirit that built those buildings and try to live in them and try to respect them, but you cannot create new buildings. And it's very, the first, you know, yes, if you maintain traditions, that's great, but you have to also consider as a people whether you are dynamic, whether you are outgoing, whether you are in a growth state, whether you're actually trying to conquer and succeed in the world, or whether you have given up and whether you are lost. And I think many, many nations have just become lost, and they are, you know, because they've destroyed all their traditions, they just do not have any means of considering where they are and who they are. The only thing that they refer to is their office job and their, you know, that whatever's going on in their lives. And the highest ideal of a man is to have a family, which is great, having a family and raising the family and having grandchildren, but it's actually a lot harder to justify that as a man when you don't know what you're doing it for, if there's nothing else to do it for other than just to continue the consumer life.
Yeah,
and to have your children
depressed.
Also have
they
jobs.
Get very depressed and sad because they think this is it, and then they're like, well, what is above it, you know? Like, I am now doing my job, I am having these kids that don't, you know, they don't listen to me, wife that, you know, is like going around, stuff that this is. I know people here that are like this in Eastern Europe, and I can just imagine how it is worse, you know, in the other parts.
I mean, nations today need you to breed, because if you don't breed, then they'll just have to, you know, have more immigration. It's just, you know, they need people to fuel their economies, and so your highest ideal in life is to have children so that the economy can continue to be run efficiently. And that's why you need to have children according to the modern world. That's not a reason that justifies for men the desire to have children and the desire to continue their nation. It's just to run an economy. It's not an inspiring idea.
So what do you think are the reasons for someone to have a family, you know, in today's world? What are some things that we men especially need in life for us to feel fulfilled? I mean, this can be a very long answer, but let's try to keep it short.
Well, in a story, when you read history, especially about your own nation and your ancestors, you are reading about yourself primarily. And the reason for that is because if you see history as a book, you know, all of history is a book, all of your ancestors is a book. You are the final page of the book, necessarily. Even if the last, the last thing you read about in history was something that happened before you were born, the people that had the children in that last page are you, created you, and you are the final chain, link in the chain, if you see it like that. And so, if you see the modern world as completely depraved as it is, and something you would not want to see for your children, then you've given up, and the book ends and the story ends, and you are the final page, and that's it. But I think that history is primarily blood. And I also think that, yes, our land is important, but the reason that the land of your ancestors is important is because those people cultivated that land and built things on it and led it, and did things to it and managed their nations within it. But the primary thing is the people, is the blood that managed it and ruled it. And you are literally that blood. By definition of having blood, you have blood of people. And if you just consider for a second that your ancestors did the things you read about in history, you realize that you are capable of the same things.
That's a big point. That's a big point, because a lot of people just read them as stories and not something that actually happened. Like, those are real events, real people that breathe the same air as you, seen the world as you, just in the past. That's a big point that people don't really consider.
Yeah, it's real, and a lot of it actually happened. Even if it's there's lots of context to it, you are part of that story, you are part of that history, and you are the ones that continue it. I'm the person that continues my not this is another thing is that I think people can only really think, in the modern world, about their parents and their grandparents, and maybe if they met them, their great grandparents, and they kind of see that as like the whole of history. I think it's also a very because history kind of began about 70 years ago for most people after 1945, they kind of see all of history as like a sharp sticking point between 1945 and then everything that happened after, and the whole world is just everything that's happened in the last, 70 years. Almost 80 now, but the fact is that there is an ocean of history that came before that, which is the overwhelming majority of the composition of your bloodline and your history as a person. And whether your nation, your geography is ruined, destroyed, or whether it is rebuilt, it is people that build things. If you look at criminology, it is people that commit crimes. It's types of people that commit crimes. If you look at societies that are beautiful, it is the people that create beautiful societies. It is not the materials around them that doom them to destruction. As modern history, by the way, tries to explain everything away by, these people couldn't accomplish anything because they didn't have the resources to do it. It's like, no, the greatest civilizations in history didn't have the resources to accomplish things. They just found other ways of doing it. They had ingenuity. They were people that created things. And it's always the people in history who do stuff. That there is a national character of a people, and you are given, and you are born with that national character, and you are given the right to continue it or to let it die off. So whether as an Englishman as well, we have a staunch tradition of being people who, all over the world continue our national character. Obviously America, the founding people are British. Canada, Australia, there are many colonies in which British people are comprise a huge amount of people. Now there are many other European peoples who are like this as well. But essentially you continue your national character wherever you are, and it's the type of person you are and the type of lineage you carry behind you. that creates the beauty around you. And so many of the beautiful things that you might respect from the past, many of the churches and many of the great buildings, and not just buildings, but also history and accomplishments and details that you know about, you carry those possibilities and potentialities in your blood, and therefore in your children's blood and in your grandchildren's blood. So you have to be very selective and very intelligent about how you seek to continue that. And it is the primary prerogative of a man to continue his bloodline. Because if you do not seek to continue your bloodline, then you have no drive in life, because everything you accomplish and everything you do is in the service of a future of a bloodline, unless you get huge pleasure out of raising other people's children. If you do, well done, you know, have fun. But that is not necessarily a masculine trait.
Yeah, well, you can just imagine that those people are still alive, your ancestors, and then just think about how they feel like that all of their hard work just went away because you were like, I do not feel like doing it. You know, I'm in this beautiful new world and I will do this and that. Thank you for your effort, but I will completely abandon it, you know? And imagine telling that to people like 200-year-old, telling your great-great-father, oh, yeah, sorry, I will not appreciate all of this, you know? It's just very unthankful way of living, you know? My great-grandfather, he was assassinated because he was trying to... He was for Croatia, for Croatian people, back in the, like, in the World War II. And he was assassinated. Like, he had two kids, Sava, just dragged in the middle of night, assassinated for what he was trying to do good. Just do good for our people. Nothing involved with politics or army. Just educating people. He was a professor and stuff like that. Good. Stuff like that. And my grandfather dedicated his whole life, pretty much, you know, he was writing a lot. He was a lawyer. He was doing all of these things, you know, and trying to just honor him. In a way, you know, trying to be appreciative of what sacrifice he made. And only like in the last few years I realized how important this is to me, because when I was a lot younger, not even when I started the page, but a lot younger, I was like, what do I have to do with where I'm born at? This is just random, you know? I was just put in this place and I can go wherever, you know, this is all ridiculous. But when you just put it in like the human terms, like, how can you be so rude, so disrespectful towards your family member who did everything for you to make the life better, you know? It's just a matter of, it's, if you can think about it like this, it is enough just to get you started of, okay, maybe there is something more to it, you know?
What you said there about, you know, you were put into this place in this time and you have no control over it. This is actually something that comes from John Rawls, who is a one of the most evil philosophers in history, and had huge, I mean, he did huge damage to the Western world, essentially. But, you know, his philosophy was essentially this veil of ignorance, you call it, which is the idea that before you're born, you have to imagine yourself as in a kind of veil of ignorance, like there's a cape around you, which makes everything dark, and you don't know who you're going to be. And when you are born, you, this thing that is in a veil of ignorance, this consciousness, mm-hmm. is then put into a flesh, into a body. Mm. And the idea there is that, so everyone is randomly just put into a body, and everyone is randomly just you know, put into this place in their time. And you're not responsible for that place or time, but actually... you know, that just happened. And then what you get from this is the idea that your parents weren't really like making you and stuff like that. Or they did make you, but you are something that was just placed into that body that was created. You also get the idea, which Rawls then builds upon, which is if you were in this veil of ignorance, if you were not to know who you were going to be, then wouldn't you want society to be equal? Because the overwhelming likelihood as a person in the veil of ignorance is that you'll be put into the body of somebody who lives in South India and they're in poverty, or maybe South America and they're, you know, they're going to get some kind of tropical disease at the age of 2 and die. That's the overwhelming likelihood. And therefore, you should seek to create the most equal society you possibly can, even if it comes at the expense of the wealth of people in the West. So his entire idea was essentially the most radical form of communism you could possibly imagine, which is total resource equality across all of across all the world, total global economic equality. And he said that resources should be given equally to every person. And this is a liberal, by the way. He's not a communist. He's an influential thinker within liberal thought, who is now, his ideas now basically form the underpinnings of the Democratic Party and some of the Republican Party as well in America, and also many Western parties, such as the Social Democratic Party in Germany, and also the Labour Party in the UK. And this man had such a huge influence. Now, let's not talk about the communism part, the politics part. I'm not too interested in that. I'm more interested in the underlying assumption that most people now have nowadays, which is that they were just put into this body and that they didn't have any responsibility for it. And as a result, why should they seek to further it? Why should they owe anything to their parents? Well, the fact is that this is completely wrong. You were not a consciousness who was placed into a random body. You are the result of conscious actions between people. Even if you were an accident, by the way, even if you were an accident, those two people consciously chose, or at least one of them, if there was a rape, which still, accounts for this. Whether or not there was a conscious action from one person or two people, you are the result of human actions, and you were created in this world consciously. And God gave you a soul, yes, but he only gave you a soul because you were going to be born. The body is inseparable from the soul. Great. So when the body was created, you were created. Now, slightly building upon that, that means that you are not some consciousness which is ahistorical and ageographical. You actually are the direct creation. You are the direct descendant of a father and a mother, and those people have descendants themselves, and that puts you in a place, and that means that you cannot think about, oh well, if I was someone else, then no, you are yourself, and you are the person that you're within, and you have to accept that, and you have to accept that you have responsibilities as a result of the fact that you were placed into this.
One of the things that people think like this is because they try to think they're above God. They think that there's something above all of these things, that they're smarter, that there's bigger spirituality, stuff like that, and that it is, this world is separated by that we are, from what you know, just this, There might be more things, but what we know and what the rules stand in this existence, they are kind of simple, The God gave us the soul, like you said, and we were born from people that God also gave the soul, And this is all connected, very, very interconnected. You cannot separate these things. Because people, like I said, they constantly try to find new ways to make themselves feel more special, maybe it's not that simple. No, maybe it's not just God, this guy in the clouds, like they say. Maybe something else. But when you really think about it, like you said, that soul is not separated from the body. It's very true, because everything almost in our faith that we do is physical. Yes, we can pray, but that is physical. That is our own doing, and this is how we practice our faith. So trying to separate these things, it just doesn't work, I really, the more I dive into this religion and stuff like that, the more I realize that God made it kind of simple for us to understand life and made simple rules for us to follow. But of course, he gave us a freedom of thought. And what happens? The devil tries to make us feel, but that's not true. Maybe there's something else, And this is the reason why we're having all these problems.
Mm-hmm. We talked about this a few weeks ago on a call. I talked about this idea which I had, which is not my idea, by the way. It's just something that kind of occurred to me in a shower thought, which I then realized that other people were correct about, which is this idea, which is very prevalent, I think, in our circles as well, which is that, the idea is that man is an animal by nature, that he's a sinner by nature, that he is sexual, that he seeks to, he seeks to basically, he's hungry, so he eats, he's horny, so he has sex, and all these things. And then God comes and we suppress our nature so that we can follow God. And, I think this is, many Christians believe this, by the way. Absolutely. Many Christians believe this. In the modern world, most Christians believe this, which is that essentially man is an animal. He is depraved. He is sinful, and then God comes, and we have to suppress our nature, and we have to, follow Him. Now, this is actually one of the most flawed ideas that we could possibly have about the world, because it is actually not Christian. It's not Christian. Now, it's certainly true that we're born with sin. That's true, and that there is sin in our world from birth. Now, some people could debate that and say, no, we are not sinful by birth, but we can become sinful. Regardless, I don't need that. That's not relevant to this. What is relevant is that humans are not animals. We're not just base naturalistic animals with desires that we follow before God. No, we are actually pure created beings who are tempted and are distracted and then act like animals. It's because we are distracted from our nature. The true nature of man is to be like close to God, is to be in the Garden of Eden. And it is only sin, it is only Satan at every time that turns our head from that and turns us into an animal. And the idea that humans are naturally animals is completely wrong. When you have a desire that is counter to God, you know that it's wrong in your very nature. It's not because of what your parents told you or because of what society told you. You know it's wrong. You can hear, you can feel God, and you tell yourself, I don't care what God says here. I've done this. I'm a sinner. I've seen this to myself every day. I'll see it. God will say, don't do this. And I'll say, I don't care. I'm going to do it anyway. And, he won't mind, right? There's many, many rationalizations that you make and I make for myself as to why it's okay to sin. But the fact is that I am not naturally an animal, and my real, and this is something that, many pagans will be listening to this. I'm sorry, pagans, but many pagans will say that we restrict ourselves and our nature as people because we follow God, and we actually hold ourselves back from what we're capable of because we follow God, and the Christian God specifically. And that's not true. We actually, the point I'm getting at here, which is I think really beautiful and many people will find amazing, is essentially that your own self-control is not restricting yourself from being an animal. It is self-actualization. When you resist an urge that Satan pushes towards you, you are at liberty. When you prevent yourself from making a sinful mistake, you are giving yourself liberty. True liberty is the ability to resist and hold yourself from things that control you, that seek to control you. When an animal sees its prey, it will chase after the prey. When an animal sees a delicious meal, it will just eat the meal without any restraint, without any self-control. And your ability to hold yourself back from doing that is self-control, is the ability to actualize yourself. And that is the most important thing, is that you don't simply have these natural desires that occur to you. You are given those desires by Satan, and your ability to resist them is your liberty. Liberty is not the ability to, many in the modern world, liberty is conceived of as the right to do whatever you want. And you have the right to do whatever you want, whether there's a liberty to do it or not. The question is whether you should do it. And that is your self-control. And that is your liberty. It's genuinely whether you can resist those very instinctual sort of, non-Christian desires that come to you all the time. What I believe in is self-actualization. And so people who have these spiritual ideas, which you were talking about how we can put ourselves above God, they ultimately will see themselves as animals, and therefore they will follow their most carnal desires without self-control, and they will not be given genuine liberty over themselves. They will actually be controlled.
Oh, yeah, absolutely, man. I remember, like, in the middle school when they were teaching us how the voice in the back of our head telling us not to do it is the voice of God. And for me, it was back then I was like, no, that's just my thoughts, the conscious, like that feeling doesn't, it's not something by God, it's just about us, like our own thoughts. But now I actually truly believe that Yeah, the God does actually tell you things, and you know what you need to do or what you don't need to do. But like you said, you find you try to rationalize it. You try to find reasons why you can't do something bad. And of course, that's the nature of this world. We will sin. But when I started making this shift in my head that the sin is a completely just the opposite path from God, everything started to make sense. And not only that, it was much, much easier to resist, and it is much more fulfilling, because you're not like just constantly suffering and being like, oh, this is hard, I am not free, like you said, I'm not in this liberated state. No, I'm feeling empowered because I know who I'm fighting against, and I know that I'm on the right path. So for me, like you said, it's just more self-actualization, more empowering, more just bettering, you know. It is the final connection that I made between, you know, like we said, self-improvement, stuff like that, and God. It just completely came together into this beautiful thing. And since I started thinking like this, obviously I get even more tested, but I'm also so much more powerful. Like in the last even few weeks, man, I feel like I evolved, like if I can say that, much more, because I realize these, again, simple things in life. It is not easy, but it's simple. And I find this so liberating in a sense, you know?
Yeah, what you just said about, you know, what you just said about the voice in your head, right? I think it's very easy to sin when you think of the voices in your head as God versus your natural self. Mm-hmm. Because if your desire, if the thing you want to do, you know, the thing that's, you know, is bad, but the thing you want to do is just you, then it's forgivable, right? It's forgivable. It's like, oh yeah, I really want to do this, and God is being like, he's holding me back from doing something that I want, that's natural and that I want to do. But if you actually see the truth, which is that the things that God doesn't want you to do are you succumbing to a desire to Satan, you realize that every decision you make is either towards God or towards Satan. There is no natural animal that you're just being. And so, building upon that, when, you know, what does that mean? It means when you actually, you know, you can make the excuse, oh, I only wanted to do that because it's just the natural, you know, it's just the animal in me, the natural animal in me that wanted to do it. No, you know, that implies that you controlled it, that you were doing it, and that you had the ability to make that decision, and therefore it was a decision of liberty, and God was not liberty because God was holding you back from your own decision. That's the idea there, which is so wrong with the idea that humans are just animals, because it puts this idea that you are at liberty to do what you want, and you are given the liberty and you make these decisions. It's not true. You, when you make those decisions which are against God, they are not your decisions. They are Satan's decisions. They are evil's decisions, the Antichrist decisions. Mm-hmm. And you are weakening yourself, and you are giving up your control. It's the exact opposite. It's not having liberty. It's the opposite of liberty. It is the loss of control. And therefore, you are weak. You're not strong for giving, you know, for it's not a strength to ignore God and be yourself and to actualize yourself. It is a weakness, a massive, massive weakness. Every time I ignore God, it is because I'm weak. It's not because I'm stronger than God. And this is pride in your head, pride in your soul that tells you that you are, you know, this is the sin of pride. It's Satan once again telling you, be strong. Have sex with that woman or something like that, you know. Mm-hmm. This is what comes to people's minds. Oh, I'm strong as a man because I can have sex with this woman. I'm strong as a man because I can, you know, I can smoke, use these drugs. I can actualize myself. I can make my own decisions. But the fact is, you know, that, you know, or I can buy this product. That's what many people think they can do. I'll buy these products and show off to people because that's strength. It's not strength. It's weakness. And it's the loss of control. It's the loss of liberty. Every day in your mind, hundreds of decisions will be made. And they will not be made by either your animal self or by God. And you're, oh, I got to do this because God forced me to. No, God is liberty. God is actually controlling yourself as a man. And I have to learn this. Everybody has to learn this because we're young men and we have not worked out everything yet. I teach people things because I've learned some things, and I also know what I don't know. And some things I don't know that I don't know, and I need to learn. But I'm not like a saint. I don't know if you call yourself a saint, Nature Chad, but I don't think you do. And we are telling you this, the viewer, the listener, because you have to know what is actually your decision and what's not. And you can't just take credit when you control yourself, because you wanted to do something else probably because of what Satan gave, you know, was holding in front of you. Just realize that's not you. That's all I'm saying there.
Yeah. And especially now for everyone listening to this, I want to tell you, like, from my experience, I think this will be most relatable. Like, in the last few weeks, everything that I'm doing became better. I became more, at my job, I became much more, I do more, I'm productive. I do more during the day with my loved ones. I'm more caring, I'm more loving. And so it seems like, yeah, I am maybe not, it's not me when I say it, it's like it's God. And that people think that that's like very humbling. It is, but in the same time, I'm doing the best I'm doing the best that I ever did in my life. So it's funny how it works. I'm not going, you know, I'm not doing what I like. Like, for example, I'm not going towards my path, my desires, but I'm the best that I ever been. I can say this confidently. So it's funny how it works, you know.
It's either God or it's the opposite of God. That's the most important thing. You don't get to take responsibility. I mean, you can, to some extent. You can say, I resisted this sin for God. I resisted this weakness of mine for God. And you can be happy that you made those decisions, by the way. You are able to feel some level of... pride is a very difficult one, because to be proud of your nation and to be proud of your history and to be proud of the fact that you are part of a Christian, you know, Christianity, is a strong thing, and being proud of that is fine. Pride is really negative when you exclude God from the equation there.
Exactly.
But when you decide, when you resist a sin and you're strong, you can be proud of the fact that you resisted that sin, and you can take some responsibility for it. But you have to understand that when you resisted that, you weren't resisting your natural desire once again. You were resisting, it was either one decision, which was towards Satan, or the other decision, which was towards God. And you decided to choose God in that decision. You did not decide to be, to govern yourself. And yeah, it's about governing yourself, really. Governing yourself is Christian, and controlling yourself is Christian. And if you want to be a strong man and a leader and somebody who's respected, you will ultimately follow God. That's necessary in this case.
Yeah.
It's necessary. And yeah, as you say, you will find yourself more productive when you follow God. You'll find that you have more liberty to actually pursue relationships that you desire and that bring you value. You will find that you bring yourself more value when you follow those decisions which he gives you. And he tells you are the right decisions. And you'll never feel better than when you're following God.
Exactly. And for example, I know that for me, I guess, kind of coming out, you can say, and talking more about God, I know that I will lose some listeners. I will lose some followers because they get scared of God. But if anyone listening to this knows me and my journey so far, they know that everything that I'm doing and spreading to the world is trying to make people better, make people stronger. And if this is something that I realize that is the most powerful thing in the world, the most important thing, the only thing that matters, of course I'm going to talk about it. Even though I know that some people might turn away, but those that stay, those that actually try, convert back or convert, they will experience this power. And even, I don't know, if that's what you're looking for, if you're trying to constantly, you know, if you're going in constant circles of failing, you know, being unmotivated, I'm telling you, this is it. No, we can talk about philosophy, we can talk about these things, but this is it, because if you have something that is so powerful, something and everything roots from it, you cannot really fail at life. You will fail because everyone fails, like we are sinners. But you will become a completely different person. And for such a long time, man, I was afraid to lose who I am, to lose my, like we talked in private, by my mindset. But it completely just skyrocketed, you know. And that's it, you know. We are not separated. Everything is connected. So absolutely amazing, man.
Yeah, subsuming yourself to somebody else. I mean, I was a non-Christian. And I was a non-Christian for 20 plus years of my life. And I'm currently 23. Yeah. So I would say in the grand scheme of things, I'm still pretty new to this.
Same.
And during that time, I was also afraid that I would give myself up, give me up for God.
Mm-hmm.
And that's once again this assumption which I had underlying, which is that, you know, it was me, the person, the animal, the human, all these things in my mind. And then it was me giving myself up to God. But that is not, simply not the reality. You, as I said again, there are only two decisions. There is not you, God, and Satan. There is you with God or you with Satan. And when you're with Satan, you are not in control of your actions. You only, in your mind, play a movie in which you are the protagonist. It's literally main character syndrome, you know, that everybody will have, which is where they are the center of the universe. And when people actually look at you, when you think of the center of the universe, because you think that you are yourself, they actually don't see a main character. They see somebody who's weak. Even if they think you're cool at the time, they will forget you. Or after they don't, you know, after they say goodbye to you for, you know, for a while, they'll forget you even exist. You will become nothing in their mind, and you will in the moment feel powerful and feel in control. And then as soon as you leave their lives, as soon as you leave somebody else's life, you will become nothing. You will not be remembered. And when you die, nobody will go. Or if they do go, they will forget you after 5 minutes. They will not remember you in that deep and serious way that you think you will be remembered as. And that's because you are not simply a person without God or Satan. You were a person with Satan, or you're a person with God. And yeah, I've said it enough times now.
Yeah.
But I think it's a seriously important point to remember.
Absolutely.
And something that I only realized recently, because I've always put myself first to some extent. I haven't remembered that I'm who I'm deciding between. Even when I became a Christian, there are times when I didn't realize that every decision I make is either one or the other. There's no third way where you can be yourself without them. I think the modern world tries to convince you that these things aren't even real. They're not even around. It's not that the modern world actively tells you, oh yeah, we like Satan and we're evil. No, that's not really true. The modern world is complete. It doesn't even know what these things are. It's forgotten. It's the same reason that we have no identity and no drive as a people. It's that we've completely forgotten that we're part of a grand metaphysical battle every second of our lives, which governs who we seek to become and where we seek to go.
Yeah.
And you are part of that. You are playing in that, whether you like it or not. You're part of this game.
Yeah.
And that is also a reason, going back to what we talked about earlier, why you should seek to continue your legacy. Because if you do not continue your legacy, you are still in the game, but you're the loser. That's it. You're a loser. You've lost.
Mm-hmm.
That's
yeah.
It. It's your decision.
Absolutely. And I recently wrote a post. It's just called Keep Reminding. And I think that is just necessary in this world. We're just kind of stupid in that sense. Like, we just have to keep reminding ourselves of this, what's going on, of why we need to do this and this choice of good and evil. Just gotta keep reminding every day, be it with you literally telling yourself, or be it with the things that surround you, be it in your room, be it in your work, be it in the things that you do, you know, the things that you do. And the true faith is obviously in things that we do. And I think that would actually be a perfect segue to just more about more broad talk, but all of this is very connected because it does fulfill our spirit, and it does serve the material world that we are living in a sense that it's making us better and other people better. So I think I'll end the recording here, and then we'll talk about some more, like, you know, training. We'll talk about other things that we also enjoy, but I think this is the first fundamental step that we need to get across.
Great. No, very good. Let's start the next one.
Sure. Part 2 of the podcast is coming in the next few days. Stay tuned and much love. If you're looking for the highest quality heavy metal Tesla Shilajit, then feel free to check out Mountain Drop. It's a brand I trust and use for over a year now, and with the code NATURECHAT10, you can get 10% off on your order. The most delicious and healthy recipes are at your disposal in Nature Chat's cookbook. Family recipes, tradition and wisdom went into it. More than 35 tasty meals just waiting for you to try them out. Link is in the description. Nature Chat's Warrior Quest, a serious group for people who are determined to change their lives and also the world around them. We are going to embark on the shared quest, but also improve on those personal goals. The quest is out May 21st and it includes exclusive content such as training vlogs, essays, recipes, but also there'll be weekly check-ins, video call meetings, daily missions, and even more. Coming out soon.